Sykes, Reel 6.
Did number 201 Squadron have much flying to do after the armistice?
Oh, as soon as the armistice came along, our wing commander, Captain Scott, thought he ought to find a lot of work for us to do. And one thing was to fly the RAF official mail back from the Cambrai area back to Bertangles near Amiens, because the roads between the two towns were so cut up with the lorry traffic and the general war effort. It took a long time to get to and fro by car. So in his wing, he got five squadrons. He got two squadrons of SE-5s, two of Camels, one of Dolphins. And each pilot had to take it in turn to fly the mail back from near Cambrai area back to Bertangles.
And there were various patrols to make sure the armistice was observed.
We had squadron patrols over the line, the formal line between Mons, Maubeuge and Avain. We patrolled that regularly in flight or squadron formation. We also had wing patrols in formation, led by Colonel Scott, and he got the 75 scouts up in the air in formations, and he led us up and down the countryside. But they soon dropped that. It seemed to be unmanageable to lead such a big formation of the Camels in those days. Well, Camels, Dolphins, SE-5s.
When the war in Europe was over, in Western Europe was over, and you left France, I believe that you then had the flu that was prevalent at the time, and you spent some time in hospital. What service did you have after then?
I went to the Air Ministry for a posting. I'd hoped to go back to with the Rhine, where the old squadron had been sent, or the pilots from the squadron had been sent up there, but it was too late, all the posts were taken. And the Air Ministry said the only vacancy we've got at the moment is a vacancy for a seaplane pilot. You're wearing naval uniform, or an S uniform. You better go down to Westgate and join the seaplane station there and fly seaplanes. Which I was very pleased to do, although I'd had no experience with seaplanes. I wanted to get that experience. Without any uniforms we'd got. So I'd got naval ones, and as well as RAF. I was wearing the RNAS ones. You wear it out. I got down to the seaplane station, and I was very fortunate because it was really flying for fun when I got down there. Before that, in wartime, it had been quite a grim business flying out over the sea, spotting for submarines. And there were a number of times that seaplanes had gone out and hadn't come back. But when I was down there, we were going out to meet the minesweepers out in the middle of the channel between the Kentish Knock lightship and the North Hinder lightship. They were sweeping up the mines at high tide, and they liked to have a seaplane flying around astern of them to see if any mines broke away and drifted astern, and we could spot for them.
How would you indicate to them that a mine was drifting, that you had cut a mine loose?
Well, I had a wireless operator air gunner with me, and he was in regular communication with shore stations and naval ships, and he would send out a special message to the minesweepers at once by radio to tell them. And usually he fired a burst from his machine gun fire in the direction of the mine to indicate where it was. And when that happened, there was great activity on the decks of the minesweepers, and they manned the gun and got ready to send shells off in the direction of the mine.
Did they ever hit it?
I never saw one hit. I usually flew in the opposite direction. I was afraid it might blow up underneath the plane and cause rather a bump.
How did the short seaplane compare with a Camel?
Well, it was something like driving a bus after riding a motorbike, I think. It was very heavy on the controls to take off. When we opened the throttle, we had to get the tail float unstuck first, and that took as much strength as I could put into pushing my arms forward and pushing the wheel forward. And then the tail float would unstick and come up, and the speed would build up quite quickly then to about 40 knots, and the stick would come right back. I call it a stick, but it was a wheel on top of a column. It would come back into middle position, and we'd be skimming along over the surface of the sea then at 40 knots or so. If we'd get any wind against us, we could get airborne, but if not, it was quite difficult to get off the water and get unstuck. You'd like to get up to about 45 knots and then give a yank back on the wheel, and the floats would unstick, and you'd immediately accelerate rapidly up to about 60 then. But, then it would climb very, very slowly, even without the 500-pound bomb for which there was accommodation, which of course we didn't carry in peacetime. But then when we wanted to do turns, it was a matter of winding the wheel round a turn, or a couple of turns, and then just waiting. The machine would slowly take up a bank of perhaps 30 degrees or so, and you put on rudder and you go round in a big slow circle. Whereas a Camel, it needed only an inch or so of movement sideways with a stick, and you're on your wingtip, and then pull it back into your stomach, and you whizzed round a complete turn.
How about landing? Did you have any difficulties in landing it?
I was recalled on one occasion by radio. They said a strong wind and gale had sprung up from the southwest and had reached Kent, and we would return at once. I think there were two other planes with me. We came back again. I was inexperienced at flying seaplanes, and I just did what I'd have done with from my experience with Camels. I landed near the safety boat, between the safety boat and the beach. And as I got down there, the bumps from the cliffs were very bad, a lot of turbulent air. I had to work very hard on the wheel to keep the machine straight and level as I put it down. But it slid down very easily onto the back of a wave with hardly a splash. When I looked round, I found the other seaplanes had landed right out, a mile or so out at sea, where the wind was perfectly steady and not turbulent. They made good landings there, and then they had to taxi in. I think there were some...
Was the navigation that you did, you feel that this was a particular art, and it was a feeling of satisfaction when you found the minesweepers?
Oh, it was always a thrill to come across the minesweepers. I got a particular drill. I flew along the cliffs, along to Margate, and then along towards North Foreland. At a certain point I turned off and steered 45 degrees magnetic on my compass, which was a very tiny little compass, and it needed a lot of concentration to keep the 45 degree mark on the blubber line. At the end of 20 minutes, the Kentish Knock flagship usually came up underneath us, and then I'd turn east for the direction of the North Hinder flagship, and about halfway there I'd see the minesweepers sweeping down in the channel. I think it was called the North Falls, and they'd be sweeping there for about a couple of hours at the top of the tide.
Being so far out at sea, did you have any problems with the aircraft at all? Any engine problems or forced landings or anything?
Yes, there was one occasion when I was coming back. We'd finished the sweep, patrol with the minesweepers. They'd done sweeping. We came back, and I'd headed general course for the North Foreland. In fact, we came up over the port bow and We were just thinking about getting a meal. I think we were probably feeling rather hungry. And suddenly the engine cut and had to go straight down and land on the sea, which was quite easy to do because there was quite a good strong breeze blowing there and could make a gentle landing. The wireless aerial was underneath the plane, so we couldn't transmit. We were on the water, but we had a basket of pigeons with us, and we wrote messages on the little bits of paper and put them on the pigeons' legs and let them go. And although they'd been orbiting the minesweepers for a couple of hours, they seemed to know the way home all right. And they went straight off towards the North Foreland. A little while, or some time later, it would be a search plane came out looking for us. But at that time, the ebb tide was running out pretty fast from the Thames and it carried us some miles out. So the plane, search plane, didn't look in the right place. And then steamers passed, but they wouldn't respond to our oldest lamp signals. And then two sailing smacks came along, fishing smacks. And they hove to and sent their dinghy across to us with a very long rope. We were apparently floating over an unswept area and they were afraid to come any closer. So with a long rope and the dinghy, they took us over towards the fishing smacks and then they took us in tow. And we sailed along for some hours with the fishing smacks in line ahead and the seaplane behind. And I remember having some very nice onions, cheese and onions on the fishing smack. We must have been getting quite hungry by that time.
How did you attach the tow rope?
We had... there were two... Each float had an attachment point at the top of it with a tubular arrangement and room underneath it so the tow rope could be brought in, threaded underneath one, put across to the other one, brought back again and made fast with a bowline in the centre. And then we had to pad the tow rope between the rope and the floats to save any chafing of the plywood. I'd called out to the fishermen and asked for any padding material, like rags or old shirts. And there was quite a rush of old coats and old shirts, which they gave me to put in for padding. And afterwards we put the lot down on a little bit of paper together with the tow rope, and I signed this paper to say that all this equipment had been taken away by HMS Chatham, which eventually picked us up and took over the tow rope from the fishing smacks and towed us away. And I hope the fishermen got compensation from the Admiralty for that. The boats were the Olive and the Zephyr out of Ramsgate. And then the HMS Chatham took us along. She'd been diverted to look for us, and she took us along, made a call by radio to Margate Harbour, and out came our seaplane safety boat and met us and took us in tow. And we went along to Westgate, she put us on the beach there. While I'd been towed by the fishing boats, I'd been trying to work on the engine and found that trouble seemed to be due to high tension leads and salt. So when we got to the beach, I made an effort to start it up and got it running and got just enough revs out of the spluttering engine to tow us up the sands above the high water mark. And just as it got dark, we reached that point and were able to park it out of harm's way for the night.
Did you see any more foreign service while in the Royal Air Force?
Well, the next thing was that they talked about evacuating the British and French troops from North Russia, and I was asked if I would go out as a seaplane pilot and help in the evacuation out there. And I was instructed to proceed to Tilbury and go on a liner, which I think was called the Tsar or some such name. And that took us straight up past Scotland and the Norwegian coast and right up into the Arctic Ocean. Then we turned round and came back towards Murmansk and just seemed to hit that slot in those great cliffs which marked the entrance to the fjord, and went in there, zigzagged about a bit up the fjord, and finally when we reached Murmansk it was wide enough there for the ship to turn round. And then it was made fast alongside a great quay they'd got.
And there was a seaplane, you were attached to the seaplane station at Murmansk, were you?
No, it was just a transit place, really. We disembarked there and got on another liner with the packing cases of seaplanes and engines. And we went along to Archangel. And we got there. We kept waiting for a little while, and there was an aircraft carrier in the White Sea. I went on board and looked around it. And then I went off in a fishing boat on a fishing trip. While I was out there, I was apparently posted to this aircraft carrier, but she sailed without me because they couldn't get information to me. So then I was posted across to Chem on the other side of the White Sea, and we went in a shallow draft steamer. And I think there were three of us went there. And when we got to Chem, then we went down the railway track to the top of Lake Onega, a place called Medvezhegora. And there was the seaplane base where they had the ferry F3s and quite a lot of seaplane pilots. And there was apparently going to be very little chance of my getting a flight on the seaplanes. And I found they got a flight of camels in the forest